Engineering News, the most widely read publication in biotechnology, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling talks to Dr. Keith March, professor of medicine in Indiana University's Department of Medicine and director of the Indiana Center for Vascular Biology and Medicine. The topic, adult stem cells.
Dr. Keith March is professor of medicine at the Indiana University Department of Medicine. He is also director of the Indiana Center for Vascular Biology and Medicine. He and his scientific team carry out research in the area of adult stem cells. Dr. March, what are some of the unique properties of adult stem cells?
Adult stem cells are cells that have the ability, typically, to do one of two things that are or more that are very important for organ repair and regeneration. One of them is to become a number of kinds of cells that they do not initially have all the forms of. So, for example, and this is often why we use the term stem, just like a stem on a plant gives rise to flowers, leaves, seeds, and other things. So with adult stem cells, they can give rise to differentiation along a number of lineages. For example, an adipose-type stem cell, a stem cell derived from adipose tissue, has the ability to not only become an adipocyte, but also has the ability to become a myocyte, or a cell with neuronal features of many kinds, a cell with perhaps smooth muscle features of many kinds. So these are typical characteristics, namely the ability to become many other types of cells than the starting cell. The second feature that I think is very important to point out that is growing in terms of our understanding of what stem cells are able to do is to secrete factors, paracrine factors, that have an influence on other cells around them in terms of manipulating their differentiation, migration, proliferation, and other characteristics. And so I think that it's very likely that stem cell or progenitor cell property not only includes the ability to become another cell, but to support or help talk to other cells during the process of tissue repair and organization.
Okay, now you've talked a little bit about this already, but can you describe the various adult stem cell populations that scientists are studying, along with some of the individual characteristics of these different stem cell populations?
Certainly. In terms of the populations that are being studied, the one that's been studied historically for by far the longest period of time are the populations derived from bone marrow. That is the hematopoietic stem cell rich population in particular. Now, those cells can be mobilized into peripheral blood by a number of mechanisms, but those cells have been used for a very long time to reconstitute the entire hematopoietic system after removal of, say, abnormal hematopoietic system function by what's called ablation, whether by radiotherapeutic approaches or by chemotherapeutic approaches. And so the concept of a bone marrow transplantation relates to the use of that hematopoietic stem cell population that's enriched in bone marrow. There are also cells within the bone marrow that in particular are able to generate mesenchymal cell lineages. And these are called the mesenchymal stem cells or mesenchymal stromal cells. Those are found in bone marrow at a much lower percentage or fraction than our hematopoietic stem cells typically thought to be found. But clearly that activity is resident in bone marrow and is available there. And those are very similar in a variety of ways, both phenotypically, by their surface markers, by their general cell behavior, and significantly in terms of their potential for differentiation. They are very similar to the cells that our group is focused on studying, which are the cells derived from fat. So it turns out that within fat tissues, and even thin people have enough fat that one can easily study these and probably work with them therapeutically as well. there is an abundant population of what's called adipostromal cells or adipostem cells, and these cells bear many of the characteristics of the mesenchymal cell population, as I mentioned, also found in bone marrow. An important difference is that they're much more abundant in fat. So instead of having one out of tens or hundreds of thousands of cells that are of this nature, in fact, the percentages of cells that bear stem cell and progenitor cell activities in fat are easily in the single digits and perhaps even double digits of percentages of the non-adipocytes, by which I mean these are not the fat cells. Once you exclude the cells that contain a lot of fat by doing a centrifugation or other kinds of separations and now work with the other cells within the fat tissue, then these cells are quite abundant. Another population that has been studied recently, and there are a number of scientists that have been reporting in this area, are cells found in the olfactory bulb. This is a bulb of nerve-type cells predominantly found above the cribriform plate, above the nose. And these cells found in adults have a high resident potential, in particular of neural stem cell activity. And so that's another very interesting source. There are a number of other sources that have been studied and are continuing to be studied, which would include other tissues such as the kinds of cells found around hair follicles, the kinds of cells found in certain areas of muscle tissue, but typically the ones that I mentioned in the beginning are the most common sources in terms of an adult body. As I mentioned earlier, there are also the fundamental sources that are called adult stem cells because of the fact that they are non-embryonic, but actually they're derived from tissues that aren't the typical adult body tissues. And those here I'm referring to umbilical cord and placenta. And those are key sources, respectively, both for hematopoietic stem cell lineages as well as vascular blood vessel or endothelial stem cell lineages, and finally some mesenchymal cell lineages, which are most robustly found in the placenta or cord itself.
I see. Now, would you talk about some of the clinical applications that have already shown that adult stem cells can actually serve as therapeutic agents? In other words, what kinds of diseases or body disorders are adult stem cells being addressed at?
Certainly. The one that, again, I mentioned earlier has the by far longest history of clear ability to cure treat and cure disease, is bone marrow transplantation and umbilical cord transplantation. So those transplantation approaches are used very effectively for quite a number of both blood diseases, leukemias and cancers and so forth that invade the bone marrow and render it incorrectly functional. So those approaches are by far the most well-developed and are used every day clinically around the world. Probably the next area of treatment that's coming into focus and is being developed currently in a number of places with some of the adult stem cell approaches that I described is the treatment of disease characterized by insufficient blood flow and consequent tissue damage. So this would include incomplete vascular flow to the legs, whereby one has either inability to heal wounds or resting pain in the legs that could even lead to amputation if it's impossible surgically to reconstruct the blood flow. This is an area for trial right now. Our center is actively looking at bone marrow-derived stem cells and plans to look at adipose-derived stem cells in that area as well. In addition, a number of centers are looking at treating heart attacks, recent heart attacks, as well as chronic heart disease, and again characterized by insufficient blood flow, and its potential for responding both to blood and bone marrow and other types of stem cells. There are a number of those trials actively ongoing. Another category within this general area would be wound healing. Oftentimes there is difficulty with healing wounds that's associated with insufficient blood supply. So those would all come under the umbrella of ischemic or low blood supply circumstances. And all of them are very actively engaged in trials in a number of sites here and around the world. to try to treat those areas. But none of them are so far developed that they would become or have become the clinical standard of care that has already happened with bone marrow and umbilical cord transplantation, respectively for adult and pediatric populations, with the blood and cancer diseases that I described.
I see. This sort of leads to my next question. Now, what are some of the key technical hurdles that remain to be overcome before adult stem cells can be used more frequently?
Well, there are several hurdles, all of which are being worked at various levels. Of course, one is the isolation and procurement of the cells routinely. And along with that methodologic hurdle, also comes the question that I mentioned or referred to earlier, where we have to make a decision for a particular stem cell or progenitor cell type approach, whether we actually are going to use the individual's own cells, or we are going to try to bank or stock cells from other individuals for the purpose of sort of having them as an off-the-shelf product. Clearly, from an accessibility and feasibility perspective, the latter has many advantages, but the issue, of course, that needs to be overcome are concerns of either matching or coping with immune rejection, which is a significant hurdle for the allogeneic approach. From the autologous approach, there's also another interesting and important biological hurdle, at least, and that is the hurdle of the question of, is one's own stem cell population, when mobilized or isolated, is it as functional as it needs to be? One could argue in certain disease circumstances, and there is some evidence for this, that one of the problems when disease begins to occur may be because that individual, say, due to reasons in the cardiovascular system, for example, such as diabetes and so forth, they may have had a degree of impairment of their own stem cells, and so the question will be whether that can that be addressed by appropriate manipulation, or do they in fact have an impairment of the cells that they can mobilize, then we have to look at an allogeneic question. So those kinds of hurdles, both on the autologous and the allogeneic side, are important to think about overcoming. Another very important hurdle is cell delivery. In fact, often I think this is neglected, particularly when thinking about the vertical integration, if you will, between basic science or animal studies into the clinical arena. A question that becomes paramount for cell therapy is how to actually deliver the cells in a way that they can invest or incorporate into the target tissue in a broad sense. It's not probably in general adequate just to deliver cells into small little areas of tissue, almost, if you will, like little blebs or pimples, just by putting them by direct injection. Sometimes that may work, but more commonly one has to think through at least the issue of the three-dimensionality of the tissue and how do we deliver something, perhaps by vascular conduits or other approaches throughout a tissue of interest. And so I think not only do we have to focus on the nature of the cells we're delivering, their adequacy in numbers and adequacy in function, but also how do we place them where we want them and perhaps not place them where we don't want them. So I think those are some of the key technical hurdles that we need to work on and continue to solve.
Okay, well, my last question is, and you've talked a little bit about this, but can you go deeper into the kind of research that's going on in your lab with adult stem cells?
Oh, I'd be glad to. So our lab is focused, as several of our investigators here at Indiana University Medical Center are focused, on adult stem cells, and our lab in particular is looking at the ones that arise, as I mentioned earlier, from fat. We're trying to understand what those cells do normally in normal biology, and we believe that they're important as part of actually directing and controlling vascular walls, blood vessels. So we think that that also relates directly to what some of their early therapeutic targets may be, namely targets of helping to grow new blood vessels, what we call collateral or bypasses, if you will, auto-bypasses. Those kinds of blood vessels are important. And so we have studies going on in both small and large animal models looking at the potential for those cells to treat areas of muscle, whether leg muscle or heart muscle, that may have inadequate blood flow. Can we actually repair or restore blood flow to those tissues. Another important question, especially for heart attacks, is will we be able to show, and we have some evidence for this, as other groups do as well, that these cell types can actually limit the degree of injury if administered quickly enough after a transient interruption of blood flow, such as in a heart attack or even in the area of stroke. So we're looking at these effects, also extending them into the brain and into spinal cord injury and repair. Those are areas of very active ongoing research for us here. There are a number of other areas that are earlier that we're looking at in terms of the translation of these cells, but I think those are the main ones. So biology and then therapeutic potential for application both to heart attack, legs, and neural difficulties.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, be sure to visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next Thursday.